Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, our mild-mannered podcasters were bombarded by gamma rays, bitten by radioactive bugs, mutated by toxic waste, irradiated with cosmic rays, born into a world that doesn't understand them.
First issue.
We are thrilled to welcome Kelly Sue DeConnick on board for our 350th episode.
One of our gracious. I'm sorry to interrupt. Congratulations, you guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That is why you're one of our all-time favorite guests. Ms. DeConnick first appeared with us back on July 19th, 2012, right around episode number 40, just as her restorative and iconic run on Captain Marvel was about to begin. Now, a lot has happened in the years since. Through her work on such groundbreaking series as Pretty Deadly with Emma Rios and Bitch Plant with Val DeLandro, editor's unwavering desire to make things in comics better, Ms. DeConnick has emerged as one of the spiritual leaders for a new wave of fans seeking a more representative status quo both on and behind the page. With so much to talk about tonight, let me stop yapping and just get to our conversation with the writer about whose works Louise Brooks's famous quote would apply: if I ever bore you, it'll be with a knife.
Kelly, I love that.
Yeah, it's great. Kelly Sue, welcome back to Talking Comics and a belated happy birthday.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me.
Oh, our pleasure. Did you do anything special for the birthday?
Yeah, I did. It was a friend of mine has a birthday on July 4th, and so she and I went to Paris together.
Whoa.
Wow, yeah. That's exciting.
Yeah, so it was pretty great.
Yeah.
Parle encore le français? Yeah.
Non parle bene. Io parlo italiano, ma non parlo bene. Mi dispiace, signori.
Very nice.
But, it was cool. It was Lauren McCubbin, who you might know. She's an editor on Moonstruck, and she does the design on the back pages of Bitch Planet. Mm-hmm. And she's my bestie. And so we went, and we were two old ladies in Paris together, and it was pretty great. We had a fifth floor walk-up with no air conditioning in a record-setting heat wave in Paris. So it's super cool.
Memorable.
Not cool at all. Like, yeah. But literally. But it was great. And we were just nerdy and took like historical walking tours and did a perfumer's apprentice workshop at Fragonard. And I just had a really great time.
Wow. That sounds amazing.
The World Cup was happening while we were there, so
that had to be nuts.
Yeah, so it was. So the place where we were staying was literally across the street from a music venue when there was a heavy metal show, and I was a little disappointed because we couldn't hear it.
Oh my god!
But I was like, I want to go check that out. But when somebody would score, the entirety of Paris would scream and honk their horns.
That's awesome.
That's how
and
you
I
do
started
that.
Collecting photographs of people gathered around cafes, standing on the sidewalks, watching the television inside.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a birthday. That's a birthday and a half right there.
Yeah, it was pretty great.
Yeah. Do you bring anything back for people? I'm sure people say, you're going to Paris, you have to get me.
Tallulah asked that I bring her back the fanciest. Tallulah's my daughter. My daughter asked me to bring her back the fanciest beret I could.
Amazing. Don't really come in fancy varieties, by the way.
Not so much, no.
So I got her one for her doll that is made for an infant and has like a pom-pom and a ribbon coming off the back of it.
Aww.
Yeah. And then I got her, I did find one that was embroidered, but it was in a window of a shop I was walking by, and I didn't end up getting back to that street to get it. So anyway, I brought her back a plain one that she and I could decorate together.
Aw, lovely. Yeah.
It's still an absolutely genuine Paris beret. So
yes, it is. That's
fancy right in its own right.
Oh, and right. We went to, this is not talking comics. This is talking Paris. Hi, welcome to the
Yeah, exactly.
We took like a printout of like pharmaceuticals. That makes it sound like drugs. Like skincare products you can only buy in France, and went to a pharmacy, and it was like a treasure hunt going around trying to figure out where these things were and if they had them and what they were for. We're just like, we just want to look like French ladies.
That's awesome.
Which is pretty great. And actually the woman that that worked at the pharmacy was so flattered, I think, by that, that she was like giving us free samples and stuff. And yeah, it was pretty great.
Perfect.
That's amazing. I love it.
Well, we should, I guess, dive into some comics since you mentioned it, Kelly.
Well, all right.
So, you know, you have so many interesting projects coming. And one that I'm going to ask about right away is Wonder Woman Historia of the Amazons for DC's new Black Label imprint. Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about how that came about, the premise, and what is it like to see those pages by Phil Jimenez come in?
DC called and they were like, hey, we know you don't want to do another monthly, but maybe you would want to do this Black Label thing, because then you can do it straight to graphic novel. We can do it on a separate, a different format and a different timeline. You don't have to coordinate continuity and blah, blah, blah. And maybe you'd be interested in pitching that. And I was like, you know what? Maybe I would. Like, I said no to that kind of thing before, but they happened to catch me at a moment when I kind of was itching to prove something. Mm-hmm. And so, I was like, yeah. And, you know, this is one of those things that makes you sound a little bit like a flake, but in the interest of transparency, let's have some real talk here. I'm a little closer, friends.
Cue everyone leaning in.
Yes. Yeah. So, since the election, things have kind of hit the fan around here, and it's been rough, and, you know, we had some family issues. It's felt like the world was on fire and falling apart, and there's been a lot to deal with over the last year and a half, and we didn't get enough books out last year, and you know, there comes a point where you have to almost physically pull yourself out of that, and as the writers, you know, we're the first domino in the line, and you know, all of and all of our energy has to be strong enough to get all the way through. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
The metaphor doesn't really work because one domino produces new, you know, but
you have to get everybody through the gates. And
it is a collaborative art form. You are no more important than anyone else. And I want to be very clear in that. But as the first domino, you do have a leadership role, and leaders set the tone, you know, and Brian K. Vaughan put it to me like this: nobody likes a nervous pilot, you know? and I think there's a difference between
I believe in honesty and I believe in vulnerability, but you also have to, as the leader, like, get the fuck back up. Can I curse? Because I did.
Absolutely. 100%.
So it was kind of a, all right, we got to get the fuck back up. And so things have been cranking along, and some of it's more slowly than I would like. And so DC called, and I was like, yeah, let's do a thing. And so I had two thoughts of areas of interest in the DC universe, and I ran them by Doyle on the phone, and he was like, I would be interested in both of those. And so I was going to write them both up, but I ended up really just kind of falling in love with the Amazons thing and never wrote the second one up. And I pitched this Amazon project, and the pitch is that this is the, look, history is subjective, right? There's no, history is told from the perspective of those who write it. And history is usually written by the victors. And in the war between the Amazons and the gods of men, the Amazons lost. So the conceit is the history of the Amazons that you have read is the history of the Amazons written by men. This is not their history. And this history is no more true than that history, but it's at least their version. And so it's pitched as, and this is an incredibly ambitious project, so here's hoping we get through the whole thing. But it is pitched as a 3-volume, so like 3 full graphic novels, a 3-volume history of the Amazons from the moment of their, it actually goes from before the moment of their conception, but when the goddesses decide to create the Amazons to the moment that Steve Trevor lands on the beach. So our story ends where the usual story of Wonder Woman begins.
That's beautiful.
That's awesome.
I'm dying to read it already.
Yeah. You so sold at least 5, so you're in good shape.
I absolutely love it. And we had a short list of artists that I was very excited about, but you know, the obvious, the Wonder Woman artist, you know, is Phil Jimenez. And so, and I don't mean to, like, I don't mean to disparage anyone else's, but that is the platonic ideal in my head, you know. He has that, he is his own person, but there is this classical influence on his work and this Perez influence on his work. Yeah. That, like, it's if you grew up reading comics when I grew up reading comics, that's what it looks like in your head, you know.
But Kelly Sue, I don't know if you can see our little Skype avatars. Yeah. But mine is the wraparound cover that Phil did for Sensation number 1.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. So I said, Phil, let's try Phil. And Phil turned us down.
Oh, no.
And so Andy Corey called me and it was like, yeah, Phil's going to pass. So here's who else we have. And there were other people on that list I was very excited about. But I was like, can I call him? Is that weird?
Yes, that's what you do.
And like, I was like, I promise I won't be an asshole, you know, just ask him if I can call him. And so they asked if I could call him. And I called and I was like, okay, look,
<You know? laughs> let's be real.
Here's why I think you should do this. And, And we talked through, the funny thing is, he read the pitch and said the nicest thing about my pitch that like anybody has ever, he wrote back, because the editor shared it with me. He wrote back and was like, well, this is one of the strongest pitches I've ever read, and you should give it to people as an example of how to pitch. But I'm not going to do it. So anyway, I called him and made my case and, you know, begged a little bit. And then was like, you know, think about it. And then he texted me the next day and was like, you know what? I would be crazy not to do this. And so he said yes. And we've been having a blast ever since. And he actually even came to visit. He came up to Portland and when we spent a couple of days talking about it. And it was pretty great. Kind of getting to know each other's energy. And yeah, the art I want to show you so badly because it's really jaw dropping. It's astonishingly beautiful work. We've done, I didn't do it. I cheered from the sidelines. We've done several spreads in God space, where it was what, like where the gods interact, and it is the work of Phil's career, I will say. I mean, it is astonishing. And I've shared it with a couple of friends. Like, you know, I've shared it obviously with Matt and Beep, Kelly Sue is married to comic book writer Matt Fraction. Beep. I've shared it with Uncle Brian. Beep, Brian Bendit. I've shared it with Brian and don't tell Phil. But yeah, everybody's like, holy crap, it's really good.
Can't wait to see this.
Yeah.
Seriously. When does this go on sale?
Well, the problem is we got to get moving because he's doing like these career spreads on every page. And it's like, okay, this is beautiful. And this is going to be like the Sistine Chapel. Like this book's, you know, because these are this is like over 500 pages of work if he does all three volumes, right? So we need to do less. We don't need to build a cathedral on every page.
You're being the editor too. I love that.
Yeah. No, I'm just anxious to share it is the thing.
Yeah.
As are we to receive it. Look, I know everybody else wants to jump in here too. So, Jess, what you got?
I got a couple questions. Actually, a question sent in to me as well. When I told people I was talking to you, they were like, oh, can you ask her? I was like, oh, boy.
Do the thing. Boy. It's all good.
Oh, boy. I have a couple questions for myself, though. I want to know, how do you feel about all the young ladies getting NC tattooed on them? When you were first creating Bitch Planet, did you think that it would become what it is now?
Oh, no, absolutely not. But, you know, I don't. So there's a good way you can handle that and a bad way you can handle that. The bad way you can handle that is to think it has anything to do with you. It doesn't. I'm wise to keep my ego out of that entirely. I do think some of it has to do with the iconic nature of Valentine's design. I think he's done just like a really incredible design work. It's very simple and very powerful. But I think, and I have told this story very often, but my friend Dan Curtis Johnson, he wrote Chase with J.H. Williams for DC years ago. Dan's a real smart guy. And Dan said about the NC tattoos, you don't get that tattoo because you're a fan of something in the book. You get that tattoo because the book is a fan of something in you. And I think that that is the most accurate way I've ever heard that articulated. It is a conversation between the person who gets the tattoo and themselves. And inserting myself into that conversation would not be appropriate. It's just that something in our story and something in Val's iconic design has given them a symbol to attach to what they were feeling that gives them some validation or strength. And it is, but it was theirs already, if that makes sense.
I think it does.
And so, so it's cool. I think it's fantastic. When people are kind enough to share them with me, I try to signal boost them because I think it builds community. And I want for people to know that they are not alone in feeling like they don't fit in their box.
Hmm. Well said.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's been fun.
What's that? No. I have a few more. Trust me. Like I said, I had people calling me like, can you please ask? I was like,
all right, let's go.
So don't worry. I have more. I have all the hard hitting questions, you know. I worked at a comic book store for the past few years. I was lucky enough to find a lovely store with lovely human beings there. But unfortunately, I have also experienced some hardships being, as I will put the air quotes around, the unicorn, okay? I'm working in a comic book store. I've also witnessed, I'm a member of the Valkyries, and I've witnessed my fellow members have those same hardships. What advice would you give me and my fellow Valkyries working in the comic book industry?
I don't come from any place of great wisdom, and I don't know your situations or your jobs, and it would be wrong for me to tell you, like, well, here's what I think you need to do, you know? But I will say, you know, what works for me is I don't really suffer fools. Now, you know, most of the time when I take, you know, abuse or whatever it is, it's online, and it's easy enough just to not allow access. Yeah, I'm very careful about reading my mentions. I use blocks liberally. And I don't, you know, and every once in a while, I don't know what this is, but people will send me things and they're like, so-and-so said something mean about you and I stood up for you. I'm like, thank you. Shut up. You want to do me an actual favor? Don't fucking tell me. Yeah. You know? I don't need to be liked by everyone. It's okay. I did an interview for Sci-Fi a while back, and it caught the attention of, some folks who just lost their fucking minds. And I will say, I don't honestly like the way I come off in that interview. And in the moments that they've chosen to take out of context, you know, I'm like, look, if you don't like my shit, don't buy it, you know, and which is true. I stand by that. The funny thing is, at the time, I wasn't doing any work for hire stuff, and like there was a big part of the reaction was like railing at me that like, if I wanted to do that, I should do indie stuff. And it was like, I quit Marvel 3 years ago, assholes. but yeah, I mean, I'm dipping my foot back in the work for hire pool. So you know, I'm sure it's coming, but I can't live my life trying to make some people happy who are determined not to give me a fair shake. And so I really just try to keep them out of my brain as much as humanly possible. Now, if you work in a store and those people are your customers, that's more difficult. I don't know what to tell you, except I don't allow people to abuse me. I don't need their business. I don't allow my employers to abuse me. You know, sometimes that I am in a position of privilege where I can turn down a job if I don't like the attitude. If I don't feel like I'm respected as a creator the same way that my husband would be respected. You know, if I feel like that there's something gendered in the way that I've been treated, I'm 47 years, 48. I'm 48 years old. Oh. I don't care if you like me. I don't care if you think I'm fuckable, you know? These are some of the biggest threats that are used against women, right? You're like, oh, you're a bitch. Yes. Next.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know.
That's liberating right there.
Oh, it's nice to hear it out loud.
Yeah. Like, I would date you. I didn't ask. You know? Like, thanks.
Couldn't pay Christ. Me.
Yeah, like, what? It's not the end all be all of my universe. So yeah, I can't tell you what, as someone on the front lines, I don't know what to tell you except find your girls, make sure your girls have your back, and keep yourself safe, but set those lines. That's as close as I have to any kind of wisdom, and I don't know what it's worth, but there you go.
No, I think it's worth a bunch, and I think that's excellent. I combat them with my snarkiness. I just get real snarky and go back. That's how I combat it.
And I get it, but like it's the same thing with the sci-fi thing. Like you know what? When I saw that out of context, I didn't like how that came off. I mean, I think that there's you have to do what you have to do. I'm not being critical of you. I'm just saying that like that's not. I don't know that that's worked well for me. I think it's either like just no, or I don't know, or just a kind of vulnerability that is like you're going to either address me as a human being, or we're not having this interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, but I like snark, so fuck it, go with God.
Well, again, I was also lucky that my employer, I was allowed to kick anybody like that out of my store. So yes. I was given free rein for that. I was always given free rein.
Yes, they have to have your back.
More questions. If you, and this is a, you know, kind of fun one, I guess. If you were able to take a look at your ideal self, would you? And would it look like you do now?
Self.
There you go. Yeah. Okay.
Nice. There we go.
Less independence, right?
There you go. Should we ask Sarah's question, Bronwyn?
Sure.
Yeah. Should we go? She wants to know, Sarah, this is our other Lady of Valhalla. This is our other podcast. Me, Bronwyn, and a lovely lady named Sarah do it together. And she wants to know, if you could see any of her creations cosplayed, who would she want to see and why that character in particular?
Of your creations.
Of your creations.
I've seen I said hers. So many, you know?
Well, in that case, who is your favorite?
Pretty Deadly cosplay is astonishing. I saw a group that did a group cosplay of Pretty Deadly. And they had Johnny, who I think had Molly on his shoulder, and Death, and Jenny, and Alice was a giant, and that was amazing. And yeah, that they were like, that was maybe my favorite thing, favorite cosplay of my work that I've seen. But there's, it's never not a thrill, you know?
I would have loved to see that.
Yeah. There's one I didn't get to see in person, but I saw a picture of too, that was a Cam and Penny. Yeah, I don't know. Something about the groups kills me, you know, but I mean, yeah, it's never not just incredibly humbling and, yeah, I can't even articulate it very well. Like there's cosplay is such a gift. I don't know if cosplayers know what a gift it is to us that they put so much time and effort into making these characters walk around in the world. You know, it's one of the reasons I go to cons. And not just my characters, but other people's characters, you know, it's so cool. And my kids, you know, I mean, like, oh God, one of our favorite Henry Leo stories was Henry Leo stopping a Harley Quinn cosplayer and telling her that she could do better than the Joker. yeah. And it was just this like incredibly, he was maybe 7 or 8 at the time. And it was this incredibly sincere moment of, oh, I have a chance to help her and I'm gonna help her, you know. And he was just like, it was so good. And then and she played along with him, you know, and yeah, it was amazing. And then we've had people cosplay as us before.
Really?
Matt and I, which like made me laugh until I was crying, you know.
That's amazing.
It was hysterical. So yeah, it's always cool. At some point when Bitch Planet gets up and going again, I would love to see like a group cosplay of Bitch Planet. Would be really neat because I've seen individual inmates before, but there's something about groups that's just like, dude, you know. Yeah. And also because I think in that world you could either do, you know, one of our cast, or you could kind of express your own sense of what is the thing that would get you sent away. I think that'd be neat.
That's a whole other contest all by itself.
Yeah, that's be its own thing.
Seriously.
Speaking of that, will we see more Bitch Planet and or Pretty Deadly this year?
Yeah. Oh, this year. I don't know about this year.
Okay.
Pretty Deadly stands a pretty good chance this year.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's further ahead. We're trying to get through volume 3 on both of them so that when we solicit, they come out monthly. Because it's been a problem for us in the past, and retailers are right to be nervous about us. So we're trying to like just get through it so we can release them monthly without having to worry about it. Bitch Planet's pretty close. Pretty Deadly's pretty close. So that one could happen this year.
Where's it going to be set this time around?
It is Los Angeles, Hollywood. In the 1920s.
Ooh.
So there are 5 volumes of Pretty Deadly planned. The first volume is a weird Western. It has embedded storytelling in the form of the Spanish cantatas. It is Why Death? The second volume is thematically either Why War or Why Luck, depending upon which forefronts for you. I think of it more as Why Luck. It is a commenting on genre. It is the war comic. It is set in World War One, and the embedded storytelling is Chinese Parable, and it is, I think that's everything, right? Yeah, that's everything. Then the third volume is set in Hollywood in the 1920s. It is a murder mystery. So it's a noir comic. Emma's changed up her style. It's really heavy blacks. It is white art. I think that's everything, right? Embedded storytelling is Lottie Renegar style silent film. And then the fourth volume will go back in time to the Vikings landing in North America.
Nice.
It is a romance comic. It's Why Love. I don't know what the embedded storytelling is yet because I haven't written it. and then the fifth volume is, I think my dog has the hiccups, guys. I don't know if you can hear it. The fifth volume is commenting on comics history. We've tried to like do all these genre riffs, but the fifth volume is a little harder because it's like literary comics. I haven't found a good way to articulate it yet. And it is set in the Great Depression, and it's Why Hope, and that's where our story ends.
I cannot wait to read all of that.
Yay.
Love Pretty Deadly.
Yay. It's a weird little book. It's not for everybody. So, but it's super, super special to me. So when people get it, it really makes me happy.
Hey, Kelly Sue, I say this a lot to folks. One of our favorite moments in our show's history, we had you and Emma on interviewing each other from Portland to New York to Spain, I guess she was in at that point. And getting all those times to go, we as a crew of interviewers, we had to do nothing. It was just laziness on our part, but you guys were so great in setting out where we were, and that was really early in that book's charming run.
I love her so much. She is an incredibly gifted and fascinating, wonderful human being. I've been really lucky, I have to say. I'm it comes off as hyperbole when I talk about my collaborators, but you have to understand I'm really picky. No, you guys, it's because I have really good taste. And you know what I'm looking for in a collaborator is not just someone who's very talented, but also a friend, because, you know, if we do this right, we're going to be working together for years. You're going to be in my life regularly for years. I want to like you, you know, and, I haven't gotten to know Robeson yet, who I'm doing Aquaman with. I just almost had a heart attack for a second. I was like, oh shit, is that announced? Yes, it is. Robeson and I haven't gotten to know each other yet, but we have been sending like metal gifts back and forth to each other. So I think this is going to work out. But you know, Emma and Phil and Val are really important people in my life. You know, David Lopez that I did Captain Marvel with, and Philippe Andrade, like, we're still friends. Those people are still in my life. I still talk to them. They're important to me. And that's what you're looking for. In addition to their talent, you know, absolutely you want somebody who intimidates you and makes you want to step up your game. But beyond that, you know, this is somebody that's, you're going to have, like, comic book scripts are like epistolary. They're They're very personal letters to a small group of people, and they're really addressed to that artist. You're going to be writing them, you know, long letters for years. Mm-hmm. Make sure that it's someone that you want to talk to, you know?
Wow.
That's really solid advice.
Yeah.
All right, Bob, do you want to pick the interview back up, or can we have Bronwyn ask a question or two?
Bronwyn, please.
All right, here you go.
Hi, Kelly Sue.
Hi.
I want to bring it back to cosplay a little bit, because you talked so beautifully about it. Is there a character, like, have you ever done any cosplay yourself? Is there a character you've always wanted to kind of dress up as?
You know what? I never have, and I think Ming Doyle is, like, the coolest creator in comics, because she's the only creator I've ever seen do cosplay at a con, and I'm like that's cool as shit, you know,
right?
I love costumes, and I built a white buffalo costume for my Westworld birthday party this year.
Yes.
So, yeah. I mean, I am not. Last year, I had a Game of Thrones birthday party. This is Chelsea Kane, by the way, has thrown both parties for me, and she's crazy. And
brilliant.
Oh, and you have to pick up Maneaters, because it's amazing.
Literally making a note.
Yeah, it's
okay. Fantastic.
It's super good. So Chelsea threw me a Game of Thrones party last year and a Westworld party this year, and I love her. And Chelsea and I are, like, super participatory, you know, like, we're people that are like it's a costume party.
No, I feel you. Go big or go home.
Yeah. We're not gonna throw on a lab coat and be like, okay, you know, like it's like, all right, fuck it, we're all in. So last year I spent, like, every evening for a week building a dress and a headpiece so I could be the weirwood tree. And I had bloody eye drops so that my eyes bled, which was fucking great. And then this year I did this big white buffalo thing. And I didn't have as much time because of the Paris trip, but I did anyway. So... what was my point? My point was I like costumes, but I kind of have time to do costumes about twice a year, and that is Halloween and my birthday. So I've never been able to pull together a costume for a show. But it would be super cool. Although I don't know. I mean, like, I think you, like, I'm not sure I can.
Shows are different for you.
I don't know if I have the BDE that that Ming has to pull that off, you know?
I feel like if anybody can pull this off, it's you.
All right.
I really have that faith in you. I just do. So, just FYI.
All right.
I think I have one other question that I would like to ask, if I may.
Please.
How do you feel about spoilers? Like, you gave us... the recommendation for the A.S. King book. Would you drink the bat?
I would absolutely drink the bat. I don't give a shit about spoilers. Like, I understand. I know there are people who are, like, super upset about that, and like, you know what? It is your right to get upset about whatever, like, you need to get upset about. So you do you, but, mm-hmm. It certainly doesn't ruin my enjoyment of a thing. Studies show it doesn't enjoy most people's enjoyment of the thing, but some people are like, no, it does. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to tell you what you enjoy, you know? But I don't, it's not about the plot. It's about the execution.
Yeah. Full on.
Thank you.
You know, I wish you guys could have seen Steve's reaction to that, because it was brilliant. He's totally on board.
Five, Steve. I mean, I could tell you the plot of many movies or television shows, and it wouldn't affect you the way that experiencing that story would. You know, I can tell you that Gloria O'Brien is about a girl who drinks a bat and sees the future, right? But it's so much more than that. By the way, the next one you need to read is Crawl Through It.
Yes. Yeah, Sarah's already picked it up, and it's on my next list. And yeah, we're on it.
Sarah's read it twice already, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, honestly, you got to at Geek Country Lady, because she's read it twice, and she's dying to talk to somebody about it, too. We haven't caught up yet, so if you need to, Sarah.
Yeah, she's ready to go.
You guys have a podcast, right?
We do, yeah.
Yes. Yes,
okay, could we do like a book group, a book club episode of your podcast and talk about
100%,
that book?
100%. Yeah. We'll let you know.
Right. Anytime.
Okay. That's what we're doing.
Fantastic. That's I look like forward to it.
That's awesome. Bob, do you want to pick it back up with a few more questions?
Sure, absolutely. I'd like to ask a little bit about TV and movie stuff, Kelly Sue, if we can. On the Milk Fed Criminal Masterminds Inc. front, what do we have going on? I know Joey is a huge fan of The Wicked and the Divine.
Oh,
there he is.
So it's hard for me. I'm not okay. I believe I can say that the rights to Wicked and Divine unfortunately have reverted. So we had to give it back to the boys because we were not able to make it go. It killed us because it's so good and we love them so much. But you know, they were amazing and understand that Hollywood is a weird animal and we did our best. And you know, sometimes it goes and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, that's the true story.
So
sadness descends.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, don't. It's not like, well, that's that. It's never going to happen. You know?
No, exactly.
Somebody's going to make it and it's going to be amazing. But unfortunately at this point, it can't be us, because, we tried in the circumstances that this is just like the stickiest thing in the world to talk about, but like, the arrangement that we had did not allow us to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you look at something like Lock and Key, like that's been tossed around so many times, even recently, that it went from one studio to now it's going on Netflix and they're even recasting.
Yeah.
Because new ideas keep coming about and projects change. So just because Wicked and the Divine doesn't land there, it could always land somewhere else down the road.
Right. I mean, Powers. I saw an entirely different pilot, you know, than the show that made it to air, for Powers. Like they shot a whole pilot with a different script and a different cast, and you know, I mean, so it happens. You know, our relationship with Jamie and Kieran is real strong still. They are some of our dearest friends and talk to them every day. So
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's good. So it is what it is. We tried hard and they know it. And it was better for us not to do it than to do it wrong.
Yeah, for sure.
Are any of your works, either yours or Matt's, on the slate for a TV adaptation?
All I can say is yes.
Yes, it's good.
Yeah. Okay.
I know
how annoying that is.
No, it's perfect.
No, that's exciting. Beautiful. That's good.
I know I've shared this with you in an email, but I do have an idea for directors for Bitch Planet, the Saska sisters.
Yes. I have met them, actually, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're good friends with Snake, Lauren Sankovic, our the Milk Fed editor. They're tight. know how they know each other, but they know each other.
I think it could work. What do you think?
Sure. It,
yeah.
Yeah.
Different energy. Different energy. I get it. But yeah.
Like, here's the thing. I kind of don't want a group of white girls making that.
Gotcha.
If I'm real honest.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Great like, point. I feel like no disrespect to the Saska sisters, who I think are incredibly talented. But like there's already a white girl involved and it's me. And I don't want a shit ton of white voices on this. Like,
yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. It's a cast almost entirely of women of color. I really think it needs a woman of color at the helm. I want to be a part of it. I would never just hand it off because it's very important to me. But I think it needs to be staffed and run by people of color. And I feel really strongly about that. And there have been offers that I have passed on because I feel very strongly about that. So it is what it is. But again, I would rather it not be made. I would rather it stay a book because it's good as a book and Val and I love it and we don't have any bad feelings about it. Yeah. You know? Than to have somebody take it and do something with it. And like, yeah, and I don't know. I just like, I am already sort of self-conscious about about my voice on it. I don't want it. I don't want it made by a bunch of people.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Lovely. One more while we're doing movies. It's got to feel really special hearing the reports regarding what Marvel Studios feels about how powerful and transformative a cinematic character they feel Captain Marvel can be. What are your thoughts about the upcoming film?
I'm very excited about it. I think they know what they're doing. I need to be careful about what I say.
Uh-huh.
I have a lot of faith in Marvel Studios and yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay.
Enough said.
We have a question from our absent co-host, Melissa, and she would like to know, the upstate New York branch of the non-compliant Women's Revolution Squad are assembled and ready for action. What's the sign I should watch for to know that it's time to begin enacting Takeover Day procedures? Signed, First Officer Megan.
Oh my gosh. There's so many good choices here. The one that's popping into my head right now is I eat boys like you for breakfast. But I don't know if you can hear me typing. I am, there's a, really, I think anything by Jean Grey, probably. If you hear Jean Grey, let's go. It's on.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just in your head, right?
Yeah. Although, I mean, I have this fantasy that, that Bitch Planet gets done as a stage musical.
Yes.
And
that's a song.
Yeah. So what I want to do it as a stage musical, and I want it would be the way it's satirical. It it would have a similar satirical tone to A Little Shop of Horrors. But instead of being like kind of a barbershop, it would be 70s soul music. And you know, just a lot nastier. And I want Janelle Monáe to do it. So,
yeah.
So I would like to be involved in writing the book. And I will sit in the front row and clap and cry. That's my plan.
We'll be with you.
All right.
We'll be right there with you.
Like an amazing plan.
So,
does anybody have any questions? We've taken up a lot of Kelly Sue's time, more than we said.
I've got a fun one that has nothing to do with NDAs.
Sorry.
All right. Here's a random question for you. Since we're talking about musicals and music in general, you're in charge of booking the 5 headlining acts of next summer's largest music festival. Which bands or musical artists do you secure for the big show? It could be anyone, alive or dead, active or broken up. So you're choosing 5 headlining bands for a music festival. Who do you pick?
Okay. Oh. You guys, I'm not cool. Okay?
No, you're talking to a group of nerds. You are cool.
Cool, yeah.
Okay. This is fucking sad, all right? I want it to be real clear here that I am a 48-year-old white mother of 2, okay?
Yeah. Leave the room. Leave the room.
Yeah.
My musical taste is not going to set the world on fire, okay? So, if I had to pick 5 bands off the top of my head, and also they will not go together. So this is going to be like the world's shittiest music festival because bands are like, it's going to be like, what the fuck?
Hey, that's why it'll be great.
It's all right.
Yeah.
All right. AC/DC, nice. Tina Turner.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tori Amos.
Ooh.
Tough question.
Huh?
Tough question.
Yeah. I'm like, who are the who I listen to the most? Fuck it. I'm opening Spotify. Schubert.
Franz Schubert.
Yes. Is that gonna be okay if there's no Bowie?
I presume he gets his own music festival if they're just handing this shit out now, right?
we'll let him curate the second stage.
He's like cool, you know. I don't know. He knows people that made music this year. I don't know. I have one left, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody you want.
Well, now it can't be Bowie now. It should be somebody a little cheesy. So I'm looking at recently played New Edition.
Yes. I'm totally going to this music festival.
Right? New Edition could open. I can see them opening.
I'm there. I've bought tickets already.
Yeah.
New Edition opens for Schubert. That's the way
I'm there.
You go. Yeah.
You're like, I'm looking at my, I have my Spotify open right now, and it's like New Edition, Terrence Trent D'Arby, Pink Martini, some mix called 70s Disco Soul and Mellowness. Helen Reddy, Led Zeppelin. Piano sonatas.
Exactly.
See, that should have been my question, is can you open up your Spotify and tell us what's there?
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Bach, Chopin, nice. Schubert. Yeah, I have a really hard time listening to music while I'm working, but I can do classical music, and I play viola, so
nice.
So really quick to wrap up my question, just as a short follow-up, I have a band that I really, really would love for you to hear at some point. I'm serious. They're Joey, you've seen them before. They're called Rituals of Mine.
Yes, they're fantastic. I thought you were like going to Kelly Sue right now, like, hey, can you listen to my band?
No.
Like, I no. thought that's what was happening. And I was like, Steve, this is not what Talking Comics is for.
No.
Okay, it's Rituals of Mine.
Rituals of Mine.
Okay, I've got them pulled up.
My friend Tara Lopez, she leads the band, and she's also created a record label called Bitch Wave. And she runs like a bunch of organizations that have to do with like noticing and giving voices to the LGBTQ community. She got together with AT&T to do Loud Love a couple of days ago, where they raised a bunch of money for different organizations. She's created installations where you actually have to, all men have to walk through the installation with being catcalled through headphones, and then you're interviewed at the end of it. It's really, really intense stuff, and their music is incredible. Mm-hmm. So what my offer to you is, if I made you like a quick, like a short playlist, if you would give it a shot sometime.
Yeah, they're on Spotify. I just pulled them up.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Listen to a song called Ride or Die. It's
okay.
It's,
I see it.
Yeah, definitely.
It's number
definitely
three here on their popular list.
Yes.
So,
I got
it's a good song.
Yes. All right.
I forgot about U2. I would put U2 on my list too. So because nothing will make you sound older than like.
No, Kelly.
To be fair, my favorite musician
and Leslie Gore. Shit, Leslie Gore.
U2 wrote a comic book musical. You could get their advice for Bitch Planet.
Did they?
Okay. Yeah, man. Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. Yeah. So successful. Not successful.
Hey.
I loved it.
Yes.
I saw it.
My husband saw it also, and also loved it, and was like, you know, and I have a theater degree. I'm a big drama nerd, so. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, I saw it twice. I thought it was like so cool, and then everyone was just shitting on it. I was like, guys, can you
my
enjoy
understanding
something?
Is like it was just fucking insane.
Well, yeah, totally.
I was like, all right, I'm gonna let you guys go because I got a script I was supposed to get in by 5. So,
Kelly Sue, thank you so much. We appreciate your taking so much time out of your day with 3 deadlines going at once and a few other things, I'm sure.
It was a genuine pleasure.
We'll speak to you soon. Thanks again.
All right. Take care, guys.
We appreciate it.
Good night.
Bye-bye.